The film which you are about to see is an account of the tragedy which befell a group of five youths, in particular, Sally Hardesty and her invalid brother, Franklin. It is all the more tragic in that they were young. But had they lived very, very long lives, they could not have expected, nor would they have wished to see as much of the mad and macabre as they were to see that day. For them, an idyllic summer afternoon drive became a nightmare. The events of that day were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre crimes in the annals of American history, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a special edition of the Ron Pertee Show. I really don't want to have to do this episode, but so Toby Hooper, we lost him. And if you know me, you know I love horror, and I love Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And he directed that film, and countless other things. Poltergeist, Life Force, Salem's Lot, the pilot for Freddy's Nightmares, which is completely underrated if you haven't seen it. I think it's on YouTube. This didn't hit me as hard as George did, because George got me into filmmaking, and I really felt a connection to his films. And he had multiple films that I had a connection to. Toby got me into horror. George made me want to make movies, and Toby got me into the genre. So there's that, like, Toby opened the door, and then George is like, here, it's really simple. Not that simple, but you get the point. And I felt I wasn't back to doing the show when George passed. And that really, and I don't think I could have put into words any more than I did over at Dread Central about George. But this isn't about George, this is about Toby. Every Christmas, I watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's my Christmas movie. And I went sought out looking for people to talk about Toby. And I talked to my good friend, Jason Zinneman, the author of Shock Value. I don't know if it's still out of print. I saw a couple of copies at Flashback Weekend, which I was just told a while ago that I need to explain these things, which is a horror convention in Chicago. We talked Toby and Chainsaw and how this is about family and how Leatherface is a very sympathetic villain. But we talked about Toby, and it was a good chat. And I hate doing this kind of stuff. I really do. But when somebody who has affected my life in some way has something happen to them, I feel like I have to say something. And and it brings me back to when I met Gunnar Hansen, who plays Leatherface in the film. And the exchange I had with him was great. It was fantastic. And from what I can tell, everybody who was involved with the movies were just super nice. For being people who, who slaughtered people and had them for dinner. But, yeah, so we're gonna take a quick break, and I'll be right back with Jason Zinneman, the author of Shock Value, and we're going to talk Toby Hooper. So, anybody who will listen to me knows that I love Texas Chainsaw Massacre. The first time I saw it, I was 7. I was at my dad's house, and he passed out in his recliner. And I pushed the tape in that was in the VCR. Yes, kids, there's these things called VCRs. And it didn't have a label on it. It was from a rental place, but it didn't have a label on it. So I pushed it in, and had it been a different kind of film, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But it was Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and he had stopped watching it at the point where Leatherface puts her on the hook. So that's the first image I saw. I didn't get any of the buildup. I just see Bubba putting her on the hook, and that was...
I was frozen, and I was just I couldn't stop watching it. And then eventually he woke up and made me turn it off. But then I had to see the whole film. When did now? I'm with if you hear the giggling in the background, that's Jason Zinnemann, and I'm glad to have you with me here to talk about Tobe Hooper today. Most people know that I'm a big George Romero fan, and losing him hurt because that's who got me into making films. But Tobe got me into horror. Just that you know, 30 to 45 second bit where he puts her on the hook, and it looks so real. It looks so real. Yeah. Let me ask you, when did you first see Chainsaw?
Jeez, I feel terrible because I don't have a great story. One thing about Texas Chainsaw Massacre is people who are real horror fans always have a great story, like you had, about when they first saw it. And this is true, I discovered, of almost every horror filmmaker. All these masters of horror. I mean, I remember before I wrote my book, I did a Vanity Fair article about those directors, in which I went to a dinner where Tobe Hooper, Wes Craven, who else am I? Eli Roth, Rodriguez, I'm forgetting a bunch of other ones, but they all sorts of great. Ernest Dickinson was there. And I remember at one point, you know, obviously all these horror directors sitting around talking about horror. And at some point, the subject of when you first saw Texas Chainsaw came up. And it just Landis, I think, was there. And they all had this incredible story. And part of the reason they did is, you know, you put your finger on this when you sort of tongue-in-cheek, you know, we're talking about the VHS or whatever. I mean, it was hard to see Texas Chainsaw when it came out, and you had to work at it. You had to sometimes drive to the next town. You had to get your older brothers, you know, to friend to get you the VHS, whatever. You often had to see it, so it which added to the experience. So anyways, this is all a prelude to saying that I don't actually think I saw it until maybe I wish I had like a moment, but it was definitely, I was a young adult. It was not a kid. It was like, it was either high school, college, or early that. And to be honest with you, I remember, you know, seeing it on TV or something, or some VHS or something, and it being really scary, but not getting it entirely until a little later in life. And we can talk about that more, but my relationship with the movie, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, if I'm really honest with myself, is my favorite movie of all time. You know, Texas Chainsaw or Carrie, period. Like, no, not favorite horror movie, but like I've seen Texas Chainsaw more than I've seen probably any other movie. I don't think it needs qualifications. It doesn't need like, it's the scariest that does it. It's a stunning, gorgeous, complex movie that has in some ways the greatest title of all time, but in other ways the title, I think, shuts it down for a big portion of the movie-going audience. They don't really watch it closely. I mean, George Romero himself said he didn't go see Texas Chainsaw when it came out because of the title.
There you go.
So, but the movie, I mean, the movie is so, you know, it's such a rich metaphor, both it's great movie politically, I think in terms of its treatment of family, its treatment of character, it's so surprising in so many ways as a feat of filmmaking. I actually don't see, what makes Texas Chainsaw special to me is not that it like, the first time I saw it, I was completely devastated and it was rattled never again. Although that's, you know, I still find it terrifying. What I find special about it is that it really its beauty and depth is of the kind that you can go back to time and again and see new things.
Well, what I love about the film is everybody's like, oh, it's a bloodbath. It's a bloodbath. There's not a lot of blood in this film. The only real blood you see for the most part is on Sally's face at the end. You know, there's not, it's not like a gore, it's not like a Dawn of the Dead, which coincidentally is my favorite film of all time. but Chainsaw's right under it. It goes Dawn of the Dead, Citizen Kane, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Orson Welles would be proud, and then he'd probably punch me. But
well, that scene you said, I mean, the scene of the hook, which is the greatest example of that. Everyone who sees it, including me, when you see, you think it's this incredibly gory scene, and it's all done through misdirection and the greatest cut, the greatest camera move is when he puts her on the hook, the camera moving down and showing you the bucket.
Yeah.
And then in your mind, you think, oh, that bucket, what's that bucket doing there? Oh, it's for blood to drip. But you never see the blood dripping. You don't need to see the blood dripping. That's there's the shock of the hook. But what's really deeply terrifying is when your brain makes the connection. Oh, this is something they've done before. This is an industrial practice killing here.
Oh yeah, they know exactly what's going on. Now let me ask you this, because as a little tiny aside here, I've gotten into arguments with people. I think that the most sympathetic horror villain of all time is arguably Jason Voorhees. Okay, would you say that Leatherface is almost as sympathetic? Because in a way, he's just defending his family home. I mean, granted, he's done this before, but he's kind of not smart enough to know not to do it. Like, he was just like the cook probably told him, anybody comes to the house, this is what we do, you know, or the cook would, or the hitchhiker would bring somebody home, like, you know, fix them up. You know, do you agree with that? Or is that, am I completely off base?
No, you were 100%. In fact, the only thing I would disagree with, I think in some ways he's more sympathetic than Jason Voorhees. And the what makes it such a feat is that Toby Hooper gets you to sympathize with him with very little, if any, dialogue. I mean, this is not an articulate guy. But some of those close-ups of his eyes do a lot of work. But yeah, this is a guy who, his job is to hunt and kill meat for his family. He's bullied by his brother. He wants the approval of his dad, and he's just doing what he he's supposed to be doing in the screwed up family dynamic they have. And now this is obviously a very extreme family dynamic, but we all have screwed up family dynamics in which we play weird roles. And I think that in the dynamic of that family, he's the most sympathetic one. And I don't think it's a mistake that the last image of the movie is not of Sally, but it's of him. And as shocking as her laughing after the cry in the last scene, equally shocking is after she gets away, you know, he does that, of course, incredibly famous twirl, right?
Right.
And I think it's an interesting question. Why is he doing that? Why is he twirling? You know, what is this weird dance he's doing? And, you know, in a lot of ways, I think her getting away is like, I think it's not a simple answer, but I think there's a freedom in that, in his dance at the end. And, you know, I think I was thinking about this movie this morning in the context of current events. If this movie was made right now, people would call, you know, it's been called a movie about vegetarianism, you know, among other, for many people. I mean, a lot of people, but think about it. This is a family who had a job, jobs in slaughterhouses, a red state Texas family who had a gainful employment in slaughterhouses. And then the air gun, a technological innovation, put them out of a job. So technology displaced their jobs, and they were stuck without employment. And they lash out against these outsiders who come in to their now the way they lash out is awfully extreme. But I think, you know, he didn't make this movie about today's red state blue state divide or about the white working class resentment or whatever. But if you want to find it there, you could find it there. This is a movie, in that sense, not only is Leatherface sympathetic, but the whole family, I think you could argue, is more sympathetic than your typical horror movie evil villains. They have jobs, they lost their jobs. They're, you know, they have a context, a cultural context. These are people, you know, since Trump got elected, there's been countless articles talking to people and trying to figure out where they developed this anger or upset or anxiety. And, you know, although it's a very tiny part of this movie, it's in there. And if you see it enough times, you'll see that. And just same thing with the vegetarian thing. It's real. You know, Toby Hooper's original production notes said this is a movie about meat. And I mean, I was you know, irresponsibly describing the plot of the movie to my daughter this morning. And I was explaining to her why people think it's a vegetarian movie. It's like, yeah, they're killing and eating people. It's horrible. But last night we had lamb chops. You know, that we don't think twice about that kind of killing, right? And it's not so far. So anyway, this is a movie that you don't need to strain to see these levels. They're there. So yeah, to answer your, this is a long-winded way of saying, I think that Leatherface is a far more sympathetic villain than most horror movie villains of that time.
And also, I think the cook, because you see he takes no pride in what they have to do. He just really, yep. And that's why when the sequel came out, you're kind of like he's almost relishing in it at that point. But it looks like they've been doing it for a while, and he has like he takes no pleasure in it whatsoever. The only one that seems to be the real sadistic bastard is the hitchhiker, you know,
yep.
and his twin that's off in Vietnam while this is going on,
right?
And it's kind of. It's just, but my favorite line from the entire film is "Look what your brother did to the door," because the way he delivers that line is just so great. And he's almost like, you know, he's hitting the hitchhiker with the stick and all this, he's beating him up and all, and then he's calmly kind of walking up, and then he looks, "Look what your brother did to the door," and I'm just like, oh my god, that is it's so great. So right? Great. Not like look at all these people he let in the house. It's look what he did to the door. And it's such, and that encapsulates what would happen with a family, you know, like, I love my mother to death, don't get me wrong, but when I got into a car accident, I called her, she's like, well, how's the car, you know, not, are you okay, it's how's the car, you know, but that's a family dynamic, it's the way it is, so, you know, the production notes may say it's about meat, but maybe it's the meat of the family, because this is, yep. You know, it gets right down to the heart of it, and like you said, it gets extreme. But this is, I could definitely see this kind of, you know, and they would definitely be Trump supporters, but that's besides the point. That's even scarier. Trump supporters with chainsaws. But now, what do you think the legacy of Toby is going to be when it all comes down to it? You think he's just going to be remembered for Chainsaw, or I mean, because everybody's still to this day arguing about, did he direct Poltergeist? Did Spielberg direct Poltergeist? I forget somebody came out and said that it was Spielberg that did it. I forget who it was, but let's do we have to talk Life Force, or can we just kind of skip over that?
I mean, I think you could make the case that he hasn't gotten as much credit as he deserves for the rest of his career. I definitely will stand. I'll stand by Salem's Lot. I think he's probably gotten less credit than he deserves on Poltergeist. Although who knows?
Yeah.
And I mean, if we want to get real talk here, which you don't want to get to in the day after he died, he's probably got too little credit for Poltergeist, and he's probably got too much credit for Texas Chainsaw, because that was a collaborative effort.
Oh yeah.
There's a lot of people, and that movie was not made in 8 weeks like a lot of these exploitation movies made. That movie took a long time, and they had, you know, besides Kim Henkel, you had, you know, Daniel Pearl, the DP, who went on to do great things. You know, the set design, there was a lot of hands in the mix. I'm not saying Toby Hooper was the main one. He deserves most of the credit, no question. But that's my guess. I'm not making that. But this is all big picture, small ball stuff. The bottom line is, yes, he's going to be known. His legacy is about this one movie.
Well, he did. I did love his episode of Freddy's Nightmares. He did the pilot where they do the backstory on Freddy, and they show him being arrested and burnt by the town folk and all that kind of. It was real. It's after that. It just. I mean, I love the show for its campy nature and everything, and how it introduced like a lot of names to the horror world. But it just kind of that episode was, if they were trying to set the tone for the show, they he did it, but then all of a sudden they just kind of like, oh well, let's just forget what he did. I think he's an underrated filmmaker. I think there's just something about him when you see his name, like, oh yeah, he did Chainsaw, but there's just, I don't know, I think he deserves way more.
I mean, you know, Chainsaw 2 is better than his reputation.
Oh yeah, I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, if you see it as not a sequel to that movie, if you are, you know, not as like them, if you're not expecting to see that movie, if you're expecting to see a Grand Guignol comedy, it's a pretty entertaining movie. I agree. It'd be hard for Tobe Hooper not to be underrated. I mean, geez, this guy, you know, is there anybody in history who's gotten, any director in history who's gotten less credit for a hit movie than Poltergeist? I mean, anyone ever?
No, I can't think of anybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's never happened in the history of movies that a director makes a movie that everyone likes, gets good reviews, and he gets not only no credit, but it basically ruins his career because of the way it has been received. And, you know, it's so, I mean, but, you know, all that being said, when I sit down to really think about it, and, you know, I can make a case for Texas and for other stuff, but Texas Chainsaw is such a towering achievement. It'd be hard for it not to be the, you know, the Wes Craven died, and you know he had sort of several periods to his career and many different things. Romero, I think, you know, even though he's also really known for Night of the Living Dead, he, you know, Dawn of the Dead is, you know, many people think it's better, and in a lot of ways this is important. In my mind, his legacy more than any of those other masters of horror is wrapped up in one movie.
And that's not exactly a bad thing, because it is a movie that got a lot of people into the genre, and that's like, it's kind of like, I'm not sure if you're a wrestling fan or not. But, oh, you are. Okay, so you're familiar with Vern Gagne.
I should say that. My pro wrestling fandom peaked like decades ago. So I like.
Well, he was the guy who ran the AWA. Okay, he was this popular wrestler back in the '50s, but he never really reached like Bruno Sammartino stardom or anything like that. But he is known for training a bunch of the stars in the '80s. He trained like, you know, the Iron Sheik and all anybody that's in the WWE Hall of Fame that was in the '80s. He trained. Right. So that's kind of the way Toby is in a weird way. He did this amazing thing, and then he got people to start their career in horror in a weird way. He didn't like, he, you know, it's not like he, you know, sat there and said, okay, you need to do this, this, and this. He just kind of gave us Chainsaw and said, here you go, do with it what you will. I mean, I love reading about it in Joe Bob Briggs' book, Profoundly Disturbing. I loved his write-up in there, because I'm a big Joe Bob fan, but that's
what does he say? What does he say?
It's all positive, but of course there's the talk about the mob involvement and all that kind of stuff.
Well, that's fascinating. So, I mean, that's the how the movie got made is so incredibly unlikely.
Oh yeah, definitely. Because
it involves the mob, it involves the Texas government, it involves a bunch of hippies in Austin. It involves, you know, Deep Throat.
Yes.
All these things had to fall into place to make this, you know, great work of art.
And I it's my Christmas movie. I watch it every Christmas because it's family. Right? You know, that's all.
That's a good point. Family, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, who wants to watch It's a Wonderful Life when you can watch Gunnar Hansen run around with a chainsaw? But
also, rest in peace.
Oh God, they're just leaving. They're dropping like flies. Can we please put John Carpenter into a bubble? Can we please tell him to quit smoking? Tell him to quit smoking. You know, that's. But Jason, I want to thank you so much for coming on. and talking Toby Hooper and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's been a lot of fun. And you'll have to come back on when it's we're not having so such somber things to talk about.
Yes, it was a pleasure to be on. Thank you for asking me, Ron.
So there you have it, folks. There was my chat with Jason Zinnemann about Toby Hooper. I felt a little cathartic in a way. It was fun, though. Head over to greetingsfromron.com and for all the stuff, all the fun stuff. And if you're listening this on Sunday, I hope you have a good Sunday. If not, I hope while you're listening to this, you don't have your day ruined by our I'm sorry, folks. I am. I'm normally very upfront and ready to go with this kind of thing, but it's just so hard to come up with words, I guess. But it's weird. But thank you for listening, and we'll see you on Thursday for our normal Dick and Fart Joke show. Goodbye.